purport in these instructions of Lord Kapiladev, it is explained that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for woman. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to a woman because of her service, her beauty, and many other assets. And similarly, a woman becomes attached to a man for giving her a nice place to live, ornaments, dress, and children. It is a question of attachment for one another. As long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for the man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious, and then marriage is very nice. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends, anasaktasya vishayan yathaham upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktang vairagyam uchyate. Man and woman should live together as householders in relationship with Krishna, only for the purpose of discharging duties in the service of Krishna. Engage the children, engage the wife, and engage the husband, all in Krishna-conscious duties, and then all these bodily or material attachments will disappear, since the via medium is Krishna, the consciousness is pure, and there is no possibility of degradation at any time. An instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Kapiladev, who is speaking to a woman, his mother. Generally, the Shastra is spoken to men. Men speak to men, and then the woman is instructed by her husband. That's the general system. When it's said that we don't recommend women's education, it means it's there, but in a different way. It means the man studies everything at the Gurukul when he's a boy, and then after marriage, he instructs the essence of that to his wife. That's in Brahmin families, at least. So the women there also become learned, and this way he's not just the pati guru or the husband guru, just in giving instructions that do this, do that, make me some more idlis, and not just that. That's not the meaning of pati guru. That's part of it, but you should actually instruct and give spiritual knowledge. That's the Vedic system, in the traditional Vedic system. Now, in modern age, that's not applicable. You know, we have the Pancharatriki system, but they're not totally. Pancharatriki system means that people are initiated into Krishna consciousness if they're willing to be, if they have some inclination to be. Whereas in the Vedic system, one has to be qualified first. And generally that would mean by birth and culture. One is raised in a Brahmin family, or Kshatriya or Vaishya, and then the child already had seen that is qualified to go to for study, and the woman doesn't accept diksha or initiation, but her marriage, that is considered equivalent. Now, in the modern age, women are in Pancharatriki system. The Pancharatriki system goes immediately to the soul. It's not so much considering material qualification. It considers the spiritual desire and treats people more on the spiritual level than on the material level which is unusual, in as much as people in this age are not qualified spiritually, not very qualified, but just that if there's the inclination, then the opportunity is given. But as I was saying, still the Ved, and Pancharatra, they're not independent of each other, they're for the same purpose. And in many ways the culture is similar. So the stree dharma, or the roles of women in society, it doesn't automatically change because one is in the Pancharatriki Vidhi. Although it may be maybe somewhat different also, in as much as in the strict Vedic system, of course, when we say the Vedic system, it may be not so strict also, in as much as it's over a vast period of time in different ages and different people and different interpretations. And so we find also in the Vedic, we find in the there are some women who are very learned in Shastra, and there's, we find Gargi giving questions, woman who's giving questions to Yajnavalkya, who's a great famous Vedic rishi. So she's questioning him very minutely. But the Gauriya Vaishnava system gives opportunities that would not normally be there in the modern age, or when I say the modern age, prior to the present modern age, or in the modern application of Varnashram, it was very strict, and it was in many castes, women were not allowed out of the house to go to the temple. They could go, otherwise they definitely not wandering around here and there by themselves. That wasn't there. That all began with this going to school business. Otherwise, women, they were young girls. They couldn't go out of the house alone, even to go to school. And then that started with going to school. And then someone would take them to school and bring them back. Now it's in Bangalore, they'll be going out and leaving they're living alone without their parents, not married, going out at 8 o'clock at night to go to work or to go to a party. So in that previously there was very much control. They're not allowed just to wander here and there. And the Gauriya Vaishnavas especially, they've given that opportunity has been there, that they can also even take the role of guru. We find there's Janava Mata, Ganga Mata, Goswamini. They're two famous. Hemlata Thakurani also, three of them are famous in Gauriya Vaishnav history, that they were accepting disciples, even male disciples. But still their role was, it was somewhat subdued. Janava Mata, she was carried, she went to Vrindavan, she was carried in a palanquin, which means it would all be covered around, and it's not that everyone would be looking at her. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wife, Vishnu Priya Devi, she became a widow at the age of 16 when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, and she didn't go anywhere, she just stayed with Sachi Mata. Ishan was the servant, male, who was looking after them, older man. So she was just chanting, that's all she chanted. And she was living a very austere life like that. So there is more leverage, or more leeway, more room, than in the very strict, controlled Vedic system. But still the basic principles apply. The basic social principles generally apply. Because, as Kapila Devi is pointing out here, has been pointing out throughout this section of Bhagavatam, it's recorded, that To a woman, man is Maya. To a man, woman is Maya. Unless Krishna is in the center of their lives. And we're in the material atmosphere, and the tendency is to be materially affected. Srila Prabhupada writes here that if Krishna is in the center, then there's no problem. But practically speaking, we find that our householders and brahmacharis and kumaris also, it's not that there's no problem. Even the attempt is to put Krishna in the center, but Maya, we're attached to Maya. So we put Krishna in the center, and Maya's Krishna's energy, so we keep Krishna's energy very close to. Instead of seeing Radha, we see Durga. We become attracted. We're supposed to be attracted how to serve Radha. But we become more attracted how to serve Durga, or how to be in Maya rather than being in Krishna consciousness. These injunctions are there, that one should be very careful in dealings between the opposite sex. Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't very careful. I think probably his first, or one of his first full-time servants was Govinda Dasi, a young woman. But later he became more strict in his outlook. In the beginning he was very liberal, but he became more strict when he saw that his disciples, they were not becoming free from Maya very easily. They chant and dance and be happy, and then there's so many cases among Prabhupada's disciples of illicit sex. Some of brahmachari, and that's recorded in Prabhupada Lilamrita, that one of Prabhupada's disciples just seduced one young woman who was also Prabhupada's disciple, so-called brahmachari and brahmachari. Prabhupada was just disgusted and said, why do you women make yourselves so cheap? At least in India, where Prabhupada had come from, at that time it was not imaginable. Although in America, at that time it was not only imaginable, it was normal. So restrictions are there to help us to become free from these attractions by not indulging in them, or not having the opportunity to indulge in them. Devotional service is supposed to be spontaneous, but we have to be a little bit careful about this spontaneity also, that if we're not actually situated on this fully spiritual platform of fully desiring to serve Krishna, then we may, in the name of spontaneity, we may spontaneously jump 10,000 kilometers deep hole called Maya. That's why we say that some young man is devotee, is with young women. Well, it's only for Krishna's service. We're only talking about Krishna. It's only to you. But you know that it's not. They may think like that, being in Maya, but even for the sake of service, one has to be careful. That's we see practically. So Prabhupada, gradually, he became more strict. Of course, in India, that if sannyasi is surrounded by, in the West they don't care, no one cares anything. In India, if a sannyasi is surrounded by women, people with more discrimination, they'll think, well, that's not very good. They'll know immediately this is bogus, to put it more bluntly. There was one famous sannyasi, Keralite, he died now, who was famous for having women around him all the time. Some Chin something or other. Chin something Swami. So he was famous for, he always had women around him. So, yeah. But no, you won't find even today the traditional sannyasis. Traditional sannyasis means Shankara Sampradaya and Madhva Sampradaya. They're very strict. They won't have women all hanging around them. So, that principle, that there's care has to be there, in grihastha life also. That a lot of care, that one doesn't fall down. Restriction is there. In the modern age, restriction is considered something abnormal. Why don't you? What's the problem? Well, the problem is janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha darshana darshanam. The problem is that it's already been stated here that the woman is the gateway to hell for the man, and here it's said the same thing for the woman. It's like the sweet singing of the hunter that the deer hears. The deer, that's the system for hunting deer, we've learned from Bhagavatam, that the hunter, they learn how to play very sweet flute songs, and the deer becomes attracted to that, and they come forward, and they come, and then they shoot them and kill them. So it seems so nice. Oh, so nice. Such a nice song. You couldn't imagine there'd be anything wrong. It's such a nice song. It must be someone very nice who's singing this. And they trust them, and then they're killed. So it's a good example that Maya seems very nice. Due to Maya, we think that if a woman is very beautiful and speaks in a very soft, charming voice, she must be very nice. Or the woman may think that if the man is very strong and very protective kind of nature, he must be very nice. And it may seem very nice, but the result is that one becomes attracted on the bodily platform, and birth and death is prolonged. Now, actually, from what I can see, the beautiful women, they are generally not nice at all. They're very dangerous. Yeah. In the modern age, especially when there's no protection or restriction, then they use that to give so much pain to others. So, very dangerous. Now these instructions here, that how is this to be understood? Because there are other, we were talking about Stri Dharma. The woman is supposed to see her husband as Narayana and serve him, and in this way she's benefited. For a woman, it's not according to Shastra, we're reading Shastra, we're supposed to follow Shastra, that the woman, she should serve her husband. And she doesn't have to do herself any japa or any austerities or any such thing. She just assists her husband. She doesn't have to do anything independently. She just assists her husband, and she, by doing that, she gets the benefit of all his spiritual activities. And even if he's not himself spiritually strong, by her doing that, she becomes powerful. She becomes spiritually enriched. That quality of being faithful to the husband is much lauded. We find that among the famous women who are praised in history, one of them is Gandhari, who was the wife of a king who was in Maya. Dhritarashtra. He was Dhritarashtra, means he wants to hold on to the kingdom illegally. But she's praised for her faithfulness to him. And Mandodari is also praised that she was a good wife. to Ravana. She was good in giving him good instruction. He didn't hear it. She told him, forget this Sita. She's a burning ember that will burn your whole kingdom. But Ravana couldn't hear. But they're praised for that quality. That quality is considered so important. But here, it's stated that a woman, she should see her husband like hidden death. Like that. Now, as I was saying, generally the Shastra is instructed by the man to the woman. So he should instruct the wife in the course of instructing that you should see your husband as Maya. He should, then if you're Maya, then why should I listen to you? Because I'm telling you I'm Maya. That the husband, if you see the husband as simply one who provides all facilities for my material enjoyment, then that is Maya. But the husband, if he is giving this instruction, don't see me like this, then he's not mine. But even if he does give that instruction and one sees him as in a material way, then that is mine. There's the illusion of thinking that the husband is like that, just someone who provides all facilities for material enjoyment. So these two cultures go on side by side then in this material world. Varnashram culture and pure spiritual Vaishnav culture, they both work together. Theoretically, one can be a Vaishnav without following Varnashram, because Vaishnav dharma is not dependent on Varnashram. If one is actually situated in Krishna consciousness, if one is always seeing Krishna everywhere, then there's no need for anything else. Antabahir yadiharis tapasatatakim. If one sees Krishna inside and outside of everything, then there's no need for tapasya or anything else. There's no need for Varnashram. But then we wouldn't be in this material world if we were on that platform anyway. So there is a need for Varnashram to help us come out, of Maya, to make that arrangement by which we can hear. Varnashram is an arrangement by which we can live in a manner that is conducive to taking to Krishna consciousness and practicing Krishna consciousness. It can be done independently of Varnashram, but it's difficult to do so. One can be Krishna conscious in any circumstance. Prahlad Maharaj, he didn't have any facilities whatsoever for practice. He couldn't do any puja, he couldn't openly chant japa, he couldn't do anything, but he always remembered Krishna. So one can be Krishna conscious in any circumstance whatsoever. But Prahlad is famous for being Krishna conscious even though he was living among the demons, because it's not so much expected. That's the greatness of Prahlad. If one is born in a family where Krishna consciousness is there from the very beginning, then it's expected that one will be Krishna conscious. There have been so many great devotees in history. We don't even know the names of all of them. They're raised in that culture, and they're just automatically their whole life they're practicing Krishna consciousness. Prahlad is famous because in a situation where it was not at all expected, he was Krishna conscious. In the association of demons, no one was Krishna conscious except him. No one had any idea what it was all about. So in the culture where Krishna consciousness is there, it's prominent, it's in the center, then naturally people take to Krishna consciousness. We see here in India, because there's, even in the modern age, there's some idea like that, that of worshipping Krishna. Some idea is still there. Not very clear, not very, not at all properly inculcated, but there's some idea that there's Krishna and you can worship him and it's good to do so. Something in there is like that. And we see that here in India, our preaching, so many people, they come and they take to Krishna consciousness very easily, relatively easily, compared to in the Western countries where that culture isn't there, that people don't take to it. In the same, it's not that people just, we don't find many people just come and yes, I want to follow this. It's not the same. And even in the Western world, we see that generally where the Catholic culture, in the Christian world, where the Catholic culture is strong, which is comparatively compared to Protestantism, it's more devotional, that people take to Krishna consciousness. People are more open and inclined to it than in the Protestant. Or Protestantism is Christian Ritvikism, you could say. So it's not very devout. It's very impersonal. So people are—they're more skeptical of anything, of holy people. They don't believe that, and even if there is religious life, you do it. Do it yourself, religion. You don't need any help. You just take the book and do it yourself. And so the culture makes a difference. And of course, in Islamic countries where the culture is just is Islam and that's it, then that's very strong culture. It's very difficult to preach in such countries. I mean, even if the governments or the general populace would allow us to do so without killing us, because in Islam, to convert someone from Islam, the punishment is death. So that's still there in most Islamic countries. So they strictly follow the law. So, but even if it's not there, just like I don't know in Malaysia, I don't even kill people but it's definitely illegal to convert a Muslim in Malaysia. But it's difficult to do so. Even I remember years ago in England, there was one young girl from her. She was from Saudi Arabia. She was a young teenager. And she liked Krishna because she was coming to the temple. But she had no intention of converting. She liked to come and see the deities and take prasadam. And she was very afraid that her father might find out that she was coming like this. So the point here is that this culture, the culture that one is raised in, it makes a lot of difference to one's ability to accept or not accept Krishna consciousness, which is one reason, I suppose, why in the Western countries, many of our devotees, they think that we should make Krishna consciousness more amenable, more available to the common people, because it's for many people, it's such a, I have to dress like that, and I can only eat certain foods, and all that. It's just so different and strange to them that many people, they think, well, that's nice, all right, but you know, not me, I couldn't be like that. So what should we do? Should we worship the deities in wearing pants and shirts? You're laughing. One of our leaders was wanting to introduce that, and he have the devotees out on Harinam, at least they're out on Harinam, that's good, but also in Western cause. So, the idea that people will be able to relate to it more easily. Well, I say no. Better we present, as Prabhupada said, that show a different culture, because that culture is so far away from Krishna consciousness. It's a totally demoniac, exploitive culture, that the further away we get from it, the better. And show that we have, this is, this is a different way of life. It is different. We're giving you, this is the choice. You can take this. It is different. You don't have to change everything immediately, but definitely it's different. And if you don't understand it's different, then you're not going to enter Krishna consciousness anyway. It is decidedly different. And even within the Hindu society, we see so many people are taking to Krishna consciousness. Unless those who are coming understand that this is something different to regular Hinduism, it's not just vegetarian Hinduism and we're worshipping Krishna, but you could be worshipping Shiva or anyone else. Unless people understand the difference, then we're not going to get out of Maya, because everything else is Maya. Maya means not to understand that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, all these things, people, pious Hindus, they like to train their children to chant shlokas, and dress their children as boys in a dhoti and girls in gopi dress, and they like all these kind of things. So that's nice. But that in and of itself does not constitute Krishna consciousness. It's a change of consciousness, radical change of consciousness. In regular Hinduism, the wife looks up to the husband. Of course, that's dead now, more or less. But the wife looks up to the husband as the representative of God. But in this way, that the husband provides me everything, and that's Maya. But in Krishna consciousness, she can look up to him as the representative of God, and understanding that the relationship between husband and wife, it has no intrinsic value whatsoever unless Krishna is in the center. That the purpose of the family life is not to have a home and live comfortably. That may be there. The husband is supposed to provide that. But that does, to provide a home and live comfortably and worship God, that he will give us a comfortable life, that is not the purpose. So it's a radical change of consciousness. And that we are trying to inculcate in others, that people come. It's preaching means to take people at, if they have some inclination, come, what platform you're at, and bring them up and gradually change the whole way of thinking. People, just like we're going to people that are pious Hindus. So yes, give some donation for building the temple. I think, all right, that's very good. We're going to distribute books. People think, all right, that's something spiritual. All right, that's something good. All right, I'll take a book. Probably, just like we're going and distributing books, no doubt, some of them are doing like this. Some bogus Hindu groups like this, Asaram, they also have their vehicles got around in Gujarat and they sell books. They've seen that we do it and they're copying that. So people, they might buy books also, and they think, well, that, you know, something spiritual. They don't know the difference. So they're taking the book and they don't really know what's in it, but they just have a general idea that it's something religious and that's something good. I should be religious also. So these books, they're meant for giving knowledge of Savaipam Samparo Dharma Yato Bhaktir Adhokshaje Ahaituki Apratihata Yayatma Supasidati. That dharma beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. This pious religion means a pious way to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Eat, sleep, mate, and defend with Krishna, with God in the center. Not Krishna. Don't be too specific. It can be any God. Whatever God you like. Or just God, no name. Not in the center, but you know, somewhere there, giving blessings. Somewhere, not anywhere specific. So that's the difference between a pious person and an impious person. An impious person eats, sleeps, drinks, mates, defends, does all these things and doesn't believe in God. And a pious person does these things and believes in God. But their intention is the same. That's why actually the demon and the devotee, unless one has come to the platform of pure devotional service, in many ways there's not that much difference between the demon and devotee. Of course it is different that he accepts there is God, and that is a great quality. But just like we see Indra, you may think, well, what's the great difference between him and and Ravana? Practically, he's doing the same thing, stealing people's wives. The difference is that he believes in God. That is a great difference, for which the Supreme Lord comes as his younger brother. And Indrari Vyakalam Lokam Ridhuyanti Yuge Yuge, he comes again and again to support Indra in his spats or combats with the demons. But in their attitude, their attitude towards the material world of the demons and the demigods or the materialistic devotees is the same. That it's a place for me to enjoy. The difference is that the demigods, they take it that, well, yeah, I can enjoy by the grace of Bhagavan with his blessings. And that actually we should be serving him, but anyway, let's enjoy. So that's their outlook. But the Bhagavad teaches us that real dharma is bhakti, that untranslatable word, pure devotional service, Srila Prabhupada translated it, to adhokshaja. Means he's not someone like us, or he's not a being as we conceive ourselves to be, or as we conceive anyone else in this world to be. We conceive ourselves, this is my husband, this is my wife, I'm a Tamil, I don't like, Tamils don't like Kannadigi or something like this. So this is how we conceive ourselves. This is my grandmother, this is my enemy, friends, enemies. So Krishna is not on that platform. Krishna is beyond that platform. Krishna is a person not to be understood as part of us. Indra, he makes the mistake of thinking that, well, he's one of us. He's my younger brother. So he's very powerful and he's one of us. But completely different outlook. That ahaituki, this, that we should serve him only for his sake. This concept is unimaginable to the materialist, even the pious materialist, and not only unimaginable, but disgusting. We find so many pious people, they become very much disturbed if their relative wants to serve Krishna fully and wholly by coming in contact with our devotees. Become very disturbed because their piety means taking blessings from God to live a materialistic life. So the idea that we should serve him without any motive and without any interruption is horrible, even to the pious materialists. So these pious people are taking our books. But to come from the platform of being a pious materialist to being a fully surrendered devotee, there's a long, long, long way. Actually, not a long way. If one can accept it and just... There's a big difference, we can say. And for many, it's a long journey also. Therefore, Varnashram. But that Varnashram, it's a slow process. In this age, things are desperate. There's no much time. We don't have a long life, and there's no proper Varnashram system. So, as much as possible, that Varnashram system should be introduced. And chanting and hearing and chanting, this is required. Chanting of Hare Krishna should go on, and the hearing also, what is in these books, repeating it again and again and again, just like so many of you may have said, yeah, we heard this class from Maharaj so many times before. This class with a little, maybe in a slightly different manner, I think almost all my classes are like that. But then that's the point. If we just get this point, then everything else comes nicely. And if we don't get this point, that we are all meant for ahaituki apratihata adhokshaja bhakti. We're all meant for uninterrupted, unmotivated to the devotional service to the transcendent Lord. If we don't understand this, then naradito yadiharis tapasatatakim. Then what's the use of anything else? Even being a pious materialist, or even being a great yogi, everything is useless. So this Kapila Deva is instructing his mother that don't see your husband. Her husband was a great devotee, maybe a great devotee, but if you see, even your husband's a great devotee, but you can be in Maya by seeing him as someone who's supposed to fulfill my sense gratification. Just like Prabhupada, the greatest devotee, his family members lived with him for so many years, they were completely in Maya. They just saw him as someone who's supposed to provide for our family. They're very upset when he left home, that he left us, and why didn't he, should provide for us. And then after Prabhupada passed away, the eldest son made a court case that all of ISKCON is my father's property, so it should all come to me. He saw that that person's role is to give me, like the birds, the baby birds, the squawking, and the pigeon or whatever, they come and they put something in their mouth. So they're thinking, my job is just to open my mouth and they will fill the belly. So even the greatest, they considered Prabhupada's family, because they're not all like that. The eldest one, Mathura Mohan, he just saw that this bhakti, that's just a disturbance in what he should have really been doing, which is putting food in my belly. That's how he saw it. The greatest devotee. So that was Maya. So it's possible to live, even one can be in close association with a great devotee, but you can be completely in Maya if we don't hear. If we don't open our ears and our heart to hear. So therefore these words are there, that the husband is Maya. Even if he's a devotee, he's Maya. That, what is the Maya? It is our seeing. Just like the women are Maya. Actually, they're not Maya. They're not Maya more than anything else. Everything in this world is Maya. Why do we say women is Maya? That's only because we project our illicit desires on that particular form. Otherwise, everything, Everything is Maya. Maya means Krishna's Maya. It's all Krishna's energy. So why should we target, why should we say women in particular? Because our attraction is like that. Because the fault is there in us. That we see that as something attractive for myself to enjoy. Identifying myself as an enjoyer separate from Krishna. That is Maya. Otherwise the form, that particular form, it's the same as that earth. It's all a transformation of earth. The earth transforms into vegetables, and you eat the vegetables and then it becomes beautiful. Or that beautiful woman form is, it's just this, the chemicals have come from the earth. It's only earth. But no one looks at earth and thinks, oh, how beautiful. I'd love to enjoy you. You can make a statue out of earth. You can make a very solid one. You're an expert. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that, what is it? Daru Prakriti Hare Mune Api Mom. Even the statue made out of wood of a woman can bewilder the mind of a great muni. So they may become attracted. Oh, how beautiful. Like Prabhupada gave the example of, in this regard, of the statue in the shop. They have the sari draped on for selling the sari. So you may, oh, it's very beautiful. And then you look and say, oh, nothing for me to enjoy. Just a piece of wood or some plastic statue. So then you go, oh, no, all right. I was wrong, nothing to enjoy. I thought it was something to enjoy. So actually even the real form of flesh, which looks so attractive, it's actually there's nothing there to enjoy. But because we have the sense that this is, I am an enjoyer, this is something for me to enjoy, therefore we become attracted. So Kapila Devi is warning, don't see like that. Not just that's the gross sexual attraction, but this, to see the, just like the love story or the romance movie, and you know, they're dancing in the fields together and looking at each other and smiling at each other and drinking coffee, looking at each other. And there's all the whole idea that I shall enjoy in various ways, living in a nice house. It's all illusion. This whole concept that I shall enjoy separately from Krishna, which the whole material world is, one who sees like that, then everything he sees for my enjoyment, but particularly that attitude of Maya that becomes concentrated for the woman on a man and for the man on a woman. So Kapila Devi is warning, be careful. Don't see like that. If one sees the husband as representative, I am a servant of Krishna, husband is representative of Krishna. The wife is part and parcel of Krishna. So on the material platform, I've been given that duty to protect the wife, look after the wife. So independently, I have no power to protect. But Krishna is the ultimate protector. But anyway, I've been given that duty. So I should discharge that in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if I think I am the protector, then I am in Maya and can't help anyone. Can't help oneself or anyone else. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? It's a bit of a complex topic, and it's become more complex in the modern age with all these well, the modern ideas about social roles, but actually, even traditionally, it's difficult for people to understand that. They don't get the point. Just like there was one woman who's she's chanting 16 rounds for so many years, but she doesn't want to take initiation because she thinks that the husband is everything. The husband is God. So, in one sense, yeah, just like the guru is God in one sense. But also one has to take spiritual guidance and spiritual initiation. So she, even though she's chanting, but she has a preconception, which doesn't allow, she sees her, certainly it's good to be a good, faithful wife, but one should at the same time understand that this is not my eternal position. My eternal position is the servant of Krishna. So the two things should go on side by side. One's material duties and one's spiritual advancement. Understanding that ultimately spiritual advancement is more important. Then, anything? Any comment or question? Yeah.
Wife is considered widow if the husband takes sannyas.
Yeah.
And what if the husband just goes for vanaprastha and this?
Is the wife the wife is a widow if she's considered a widow if the husband takes sannyas. And what if he becomes a vanaprastha? Well, there are different levels of vanaprastha. Generally, the vanaprastha, the husband and wife live together. He may go away sometimes also and be away from him. There is a stage of vanaprastha where one becomes completely separated, but no, the wife is not considered a widow.
Like in the case of Prabhupada,
he was away, yeah. He was away, and then later he took sannyas. He was away from home. Practically he took sannyas because one of his sons was coming, Vrindavan Chandra, and he was trying to get him to come back and do the business again. And he said, no, I'm finished with that now. You manage it whatever way you like. They were all useless anyway, materially, his sons. They didn't help him in the business. I mean, when they grew up, even now, completely useless. They can't earn anything. So, Prabhupada's family situation was conducive for him to leave it. We're very glad for that. But if the husband and wife are cooperating together in Krishna consciousness, there may not be any need also to take sannyas. Of course, it's good at the end of life to completely become away, because even the husband and wife are both devotees, but still some kind of material attachment may be there also. So therefore it's at the end it's good to just separate. Officially taking sannyas may not be necessary. Sannyas that was reintroduced by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for preaching. So the traditional sannyas in which the main purpose is renunciation of the world, that's not the main purpose of our modern Gauriya Vaishnava sannyas. Because one's supposed to be renounced anyone, if one is to be a devotee, has to be renounced from this world. And we don't encourage anyone to be very attached to the world, even if you are a grihastha. But just to renounce, that's not the main thing that we're interested in. Is then you can do that without taking sannyas. But the main reason is for preaching. So there's no point to take sannyas unless one significantly increases one's preaching in doing so. So just because one's old, that's not a reason to take sannyas. It's a good reason to become detached. Because you're not going to have much more time, you better do it now. But there's just to take sannyas and not and just sit in an ashram and be old, and there's no point. Yeah, you want to ask a question?
I wanted to ask how should the relationship between my husband and wife, like if the responsibility of the husband is to instruct the shastra, but there is also some. I wanted to ask how much room is there also for some feelings, affections like this, because usually women they need that also very much, being conditioned. So how is Krishna conscious?
Men also.
Yeah, men also. But generally, how do you also this? How do you balance that? How we should face our feelings in our life so that it's.
Yeah, but affection, but not material affection. Just like among devotees, we're all serving Krishna together, so naturally there's a feeling of affection. But that's because the center is Krishna, it's not material. So similarly, husband and wife, they're living together, and they have so many material things to do together, but if Krishna's at the center, that definitely that affection will be there if you're doing so many things together. But the center is Krishna, and that's not material. You understand that? It's not that you have, because you're married, you have to sit together and be in Maya and talk all nonsense, and that's called affection. That's not affection, that's Maya. Maya is never affection. And exchange of affection means like that, showing appreciation, smiling, all these things like that. Gratefulness for all these things. So that's it. But the center is Krishna. So definitely affection is it. It's not a wooden relationship. But the center is Krishna.
In many places, Prabhupada said that everyone should leave the family life, Panja Shrota Manam Rajat, Prabhupada quotes.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I heard, but I heard that there is in Vedic standard, like Brahmanas were going through all four ashramas. And
yeah, I heard Prabhupada said it also, that Brahmanas, they go all through all four ashrams, Kshatriyas through three, and Vaishyas two, and Grihasthas, they don't have Brahmacharya life, only marriage, only one ashram, Grihastha ashram. For Shudras, there's only one sanskar also, which is getting married. So yeah, Panchash Ordvam Vanam Vrajet, at the age of 50, one should leave home. Yeah, the these books, they're meant for the higher classes of people. That may be not a good idea for someone who's not fit for that to leave home. If they're not cultivating higher consciousness, then it's not. Let them remain in the situation which is suitable for them. Hare Krishna, yeah?
There's a question here. Uttaradhinam Graha
Surya. Yeah.
So is it only for when there is no boy child, that Graha is Surya is it? When there is a girl child, what happens? There's a question here.
Putrahinam grihashunyam. The home is empty without a son. It doesn't say putrihinam. So what does it mean? It means what it says. You don't understand it. I think that's what you mean. You don't understand it. What it means is that you don't understand it. That's what it means. Yeah, more emphasis is placed on sons than daughters, because that Prabhupada often quoted Manu, that putra te kriyate bharya putra pinda prayojanam, that one accepts a wife for the sake of having a son, and the son offers pinda, or the performs the ceremonies for the pitris. And we find in the Shastra that if one doesn't get married, it's a great sin, because one has to produce children. So that's one of the five debts. One has five debts. Srinam pitrinam. There's the pitris. There's one of the five kinds of debts is to the pitris, or the forefathers. So that is discharged by getting married, having children, having sons particularly, and offering pinda in the Shraddha ceremony. So that's to be done by a boy. In some Smriti Shastras it's stated that if there's no son it can be done by a daughter, but generally that's to be done by the son. It's a patriarchal society. That means men are apparently more favored on the material platform. Oh, this is a big topic. I discussed it many times. It's a topic. You don't have a Tamil word? The Tamil word is topic.
Topic is collective.
All right. I just heard it. You can speak in Tamil. I encourage that. This anglicized Indian language is not so good. Better use the original. If they don't know the word, teach it to them. Let them learn. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada gave the example that a 16-year-old boy can travel all over the world, but a 16-year-old girl cannot, for obvious reasons. She'll be forcibly misused. So women are the weaker sex. Emotionally also. So they require protection, which means control. And people don't like this when you say this, but modern society means that there's so much immorality, which destroys the fabric of human society and makes it totally unfit for spiritual advancement, which is the real purpose. So if women are not protected, which means controlled, no, don't go, you're not allowed to go outside. You just can't go in. Everyone's controlled. Not just the women, that in the traditional, not only Indian, but definitely in Indian families, the children, you may be married, young man, you just can't go here and there and do whatever you like. You're still under the control of your father, and he's under the control of his father. So it was the family was very strict actually. But that kept society in order. And nowadays it's illicit sex, abortions, and it's very... And then Varna Sankara, children are born who are just lusty. So the whole situation is very bad. It's... In modern society, everyone thinks, they just presume... There's this idea that the whole human race up to now was wrong because they didn't give women equal rights to men. And now we've understood. But look at the state of human society now. But practically everyone thinks so. I mean, you talk with people, and the way they talk, they just presume that it was wrong up until about 20 or 30 years ago. It was just the whole society was wrong. Now it's good that, you know, women can go out at 10 o'clock at night alone, and they think that's good. They have their rights now. They can do what they like. The right to get raped, and then they complain. Oh, there's so many rape cases. What do you expect? You're going out all dressed up with perfume on and going out alone, and what do you expect? You're inviting it. It's a big discussion. I've discussed it so many times. I'm not going to discuss it more. No, not right now. It has to be discussed more. Actually, all these topics should be put in books. I want to write books. Then everything will be there systematically, and you'll see everything. And people will not like it, but those who are more sane, they will understand it. Now the situation in India is ridiculous. The women have more rights. That one devotee was telling me that he has to work to pay for his sister to get married. She's also working, but he has to support his parents and pay money to get the daughter married, to buy all the, and she's also working, and she keeps the money. So women have more rights. And then when the husband and wife divorce, which, by the way, all over the world, it's the vast number of divorce cases are instigated by women, not by men. That the women, the courts always favor the woman. The man is always wrong. They just presume the man must be wrong. So anyway, that's a big discussion, which is not directly related to Krishna consciousness, but because Prabhupada discussed so many social issues also. We do also, because Srila Prabhupada's mission is to reform society, to make it on a somewhat more sane basis so that we can practice Krishna consciousness in a more conducive manner. Otherwise, our business is not to discuss feminism, anti-feminism, and all these things. It's not our subject, but it is also, in as much as Shastra discusses these things and Prabhupada discusses these things, and we have to live in this world according to the guidelines of Shastra. Now again, it turned out the Pancharatriki system recognizes the soul, directly recognizes the soul. So, yeah, equal rights, spiritual rights, equal. You also chant, and women, they can be fully Krishna conscious, that's not denied. But social role is different. And even this offering shraad and all this, as Vaishnavas, we don't even need to do that, so. But, socially, at least on the surface, more importance is given to men. But then if you see in the history, just like if you see the huge graveyards, do they have that in your country? Huge graveyards for all the soldiers. They're all men. It's the men who are going out and fighting to protect the women. And now they allowed women to join the army and the American army. They can also go in. But still more men are going. Women are generally not attracted to that. So, the women, they may have some socially apparently lower role, but then when it comes to things, you know, when the men they have to fight to protect and give their lives if necessary to protect the women. When the Titanic ship went down, they put all the women on the boats, and there were many big men there, like big, in very high in human society, but they put the men drowned, the very high social status men, they drowned and let the women, the maidservants, go in the boats. Because that idea was there, we have to protect the women. So, but nowadays, I don't know, because it's equal rights, you can't complain, you know. Don't expect anything extra. Don't expect the man to hold the door open for you. If it's equal rights, he'll push you out of the way, same way he pushes everyone else out of the way. then you're just in competition. Then you join the sports club. They have the women's boxing championships. They have. That's right. They have it. Women's boxing. Isn't it right? Nonsense. And actually, there are so many women in the Western world, they're learning karate and all this because they have to. Because they get attacked. So what kind of freedom is it that you have to learn karate so you can get it to protect yourself? Isn't it better to live comfortably at home like women like to do? Live comfortably means you have to work also, clean the house and everything. And have children like all women like to have, actually, even though they deny it. And, you know, you're protected. Rather than go out in the world and fight. You know, you have the equal right to work. What does that mean, equal right? Equal right to sit on a crammed bus and get in some office and get a headache. And this is just cheating, this woman's liberation. You have equal right. What equal right? That instead of being at home, you're going to some factory, and it's called equal rights. They're just cheating them, that's all. You see the young girls, they like, very young girls, they like to pick up babies, because it's the natural psychology that women like to have children, but now they're trained in a way that they don't like to have children. Oh, I don't have children. But then later they suffer, and they actually, even at the same time, they suffer. It's a very strong, with the woman's body goes a very strong desire to have children. If they don't have it, then they're very unhappy. So anyway, we'll finish there. Hare Krishna.